This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, campaign ads get nasty. Rush Limbaugh apologizes after saying Michael J. Fox played up his Parkinson's tremors in a Missouri ad. And in Tennessee, TV spots dog Senate hopeful Harold Ford Jr. for his Playboy image. Joining us today from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., we've got Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture, along with Ron Christie. He's the vice president counsel for the lobbying firm D.C. Navigators and former special assistant to President Bush. In our New York bureau, we've got Walter Field, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com. Welcome to all of you, and let's start with the negative ads. Actor Michael J. Fox has lobbied for stem cell research for years. He struggled with Parkinson's for years, and this campaign season he's appeared in several ads for candidates backing stem cell research, which is controversial. This one ran in Missouri.
As you might know, I care deeply about stem cell research. In Missouri, you can elect Claire McCaskill, who shares my hope for cures. Unfortunately, Senator Jim Talent opposes expanding stem cell research. Senator Talent even wanted to criminalize the science that gives us a chance for hope. They say all politics is local, but it's not always the case. What you do in Missouri matters to millions of Americans, Americans like me.
And when you hear that ad, of course, we can't show it on the radio, you hear what sounds like cloth rubbing. He is twitching and bobbing and weaving. And then talk show host Rush Limbaugh had this to say about the ad after it aired.
This is really shameless, folks. This is really shameless of Michael J. Fox. Either he didn't take his medication or he's acting, one of the two.
All right, I'm going to go to you, Ron Christie. What are we to make of this?
Unfortunately, I think that Michael J. Fox has really been a hero to so many Americans, and what has happened to him, and we've seen the degenerative nature of his disease, I think it's painful for all of us to watch. But Mr. Fox put himself in the political discourse when he shot spots in Missouri and in Maryland and a couple of other states around the country talking about stem cell research. I think if you listen to what Mr. Fox actually said as it relates to Mr. Talent's record, I think his comments are a little bit misleading. He suggests, Mr. Fox does, that Mr. Talent is against stem cell research, and that is just not true. Senator Talent is against a particular form of embryonic stem cell research, which would destroy embryos. And Mr. Fox does not mention that in that 30-second television spot. But looking at what Mr. Limbaugh had to say, I think, again, it's unfortunate. Mr. Limbaugh said that either Mr. Fox had not taken his medication or was exaggerating or acting for the benefit of the cameras. Mr. Limbaugh apologized. I think that is not a proper course of action for one who is such a powerful commentator to be saying on television when there's so many millions of Americans who suffer from the disease. But fair or unfair, Mr. Fox put himself in the political crosshairs when he cut those spots for television.
Yvonne, embryonic stem cell research is often compared to abortion in the sense that you have embryos usually left over from unused fertility treatments that go into this research. And that's part of the debate over this. I don't want to get too deep into stem cell research, but what do you think of the ad and the controversy?
Well, I guess from where I stand, this has less to do with Michael J. Fox and his inserting himself into political dialogue than it does for Rush Limbaugh to now appear that he has some medical expertise, which he does not. He did not really address the fact of what Mr. Fox said in terms of his support of one candidate over the other one. I think given his own track record and given his own personal foibles that he should have been more considerate of what he was saying. And I think that we're having a different debate here. This is not about a debate of ideas, whether one guy is better than the other ones. These are personal attacks. And I think that the public is just simply getting tired of whether it's political pundits or whether it's political candidates skirting the issue at hand, the substantive issue, just to lob grenades at a particular person. So certainly Michael J. Fox inserts himself in a particular political dialogue, and I think Rush Limbaugh certainly could have debated whether or not his position was correct in terms of these particular political stances, but to start talking about whether or not the man was off his medication and whether or not he was acting for the camera, I think that's an abominable thing. And he's playing to a particular audience that perhaps appreciates that type of dialogue.
Walter, you know, in some ways, Rush Limbaugh seems like a Teflon guy because he had, you know, well-publicized problems with possession of OxyContin, which is a powerful medical narcotic that apparently he wasn't supposed to have. And now he's talking about Michael J. Fox's medication. I mean, does it really matter that he himself, Rush Limbaugh, has a questionable record, or is he just Teflon and able to roll like that?
Well, it's the era of new media. What Rush Limbaugh has is an audience, and it makes money for the owners of his syndication. You know, I think it's one thing if he talked about accuracy of the ad, which he didn't do. I mean, this was a personal attack, and it's just part of sort of the rhetoric we hear in talking head media. You know, it's rarely steeped in truth, though it's presented as such. So I think, you know, Rush Limbaugh, he is not Teflon. Clearly, he was criticized for his own personal failures. But what we have here is a situation where we have a niche audience, and Rush Limbaugh makes money. And I think he'll always be on the air as long as he makes money. The day that he stops making money, we won't hear from this man again. I mean, that's the sad truth of it all. So I think we're splitting hairs here. Let's not talk about the accuracy of Michael J. Fox's statements unless Rush Limbaugh directly addressed that. He didn't do that. This was a personal attack that suggested that this person was faking an illness, which I find incredible that anyone could even find a way to defend that attack. And I think it's tragic because I think millions of Americans, Republican and Democrats, probably find this to be a very shameful expression from Mr. Limbaugh.
And along those lines, I went on YouTube, which has both of the videos, the video of Rush Limbaugh and the video of Michael J. Fox. And a lot of people were, you know, saying across partisan lines that they didn't like the attack. But let's move on to another attack ad because it's that season. Just like you have the holidays, you have attack ad season and we're deep in it. So you've got Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Harold Ford Jr. He went to a party at the, you know, Playboy Mansion, a 2005 Playboy Super Bowl party. I don't know if it was actually at the mansion, but it was a Playboy party. And he said, I like football and I like girls. I don't want to apologize. But now there's a Republican National Committee ad condemning his ways. Let's take a listen.
So what kind of man parties with Playboy playmates in lingerie, then films political ads from a church pew? What kind of man is Harold Ford? The National Republican Senatorial Committee is responsible for the content of this ad.
Yvonne, should women be offended? Should men be offended? Should everyone be offended by Harold Ford? Or should people be offended by the ad, which has overtones of, you know, miscegenation, you know, a blonde woman and talking about Harold. And, you know, there's been a lot of criticism that this might be more of a racial attack than a sexual attack.
Harold Ford should be ashamed of Harold Ford. At this point, throughout his career, he has been very careful in terms of sculpting his image as well as his political message, and to try and at least appear that he was in the mainstream of the political spectrum. I think that there was no way that he should have not understood the political ramifications of him appearing at a party associated with Playboy. Now, as a private citizen, you know, whether or not that's his right, you know, that's his business. But he is not a private citizen. He's running for a high political office. So certainly there are people in the South and in other parts of the country that do buy into the whole racial undertones of seeing some blonde woman talking about Harold Ford, and they can read into it what they will. I think that Harold Ford has no one to blame but Harold Ford for whatever comes out of this debacle, and that's it. I mean, I think in this day and age it's unfortunate, but those feelings, those racial feelings still exist, and he opened a door for his opponent to attack him, rightly or wrongly.
Walter, he made his bed, he's lying in it. Is that how you feel?
Not necessarily. I think many Americans are growing to the point that they want to keep politics out of the bedroom. And I think what we're seeing here is the morality play that really isn't working for the Republican Party this election cycle. I'm surprised they used it in Tennessee. That's my shock, given all the skeletons in the GOP closet this year. I think it was a strategic mistake to even roll this ad out, because I think it gives Harold Ford, despite what you may think of his personal preferences and choices, I think it gives him another weapon to use against the Republican Party at a time when the state of Tennessee is facing some serious issues. This is the best that the Republicans can come up with, that he went to a Playboy party at a Super Bowl. So I think most voters will look at this, including some Republicans, and say, you've got to be kidding me. There are more substantive issues to talk about and better things to do with airtime than running an ad like this, or the one that runs on TV where you have a blonde sort of winking at him saying, call me, Harold. I mean, it's really juvenile politics at its worst.
Ron, is this a bad ad, or is this a strategic and powerful ad?
I don't think it's a bad ad. I agree with what my colleague said earlier. When you run for public office and you put yourself in the public light, if you film political television spots where you're in a church and you hold yourself out to high moral values and high moral character, and then you attend a party in Jacksonville, Florida, a Super Bowl party hosted by Playboy magazine, I think that if you're an official in the public light, it allows certain individuals to criticize or to question your morality choices. But looking at the broader racial overtones, I think this is a tempest in a teapot and much ado about nothing. To suggest that a blonde woman saying, I met Harold Ford at a Playboy party, somehow has racial overtones or is racist, which has been so much of the discourse for the last couple of days, I think is ridiculous. In my opinion, it is equally racist to suggest that if a particular person who is Caucasian says, I met Harold Ford at a party, is racist, are individuals then saying that it should have been a African-American woman saying that, or a Hispanic woman? I think this is much ado about nothing, but right or wrong, Mr. Ford has put himself in the crosshairs by holding himself up to be a strong moral character and then attending that party and at a Playboy party and then allowing his opponents the opportunity to criticize him.
Can I just want to add one thing. I think that's a complete misunderstanding of U.S. history, particularly in the South. The notion of interracial relationships have yet to really receive mainstream support in some of those southern states. I think there's a subliminal message that is given. If that were the case, then why not have a black woman in that ad that says, call me Harold? That was a decision made by campaign strategists to pitch to a certain segment of the electorate, I suspect white males, who are probably more likely to support the Republican candidate, because they could have easily chosen a black woman. So I think to suggest that race had nothing to do with the thinking behind that ad is a complete misread of not only current politics, but our history. So I don't think you can walk away from the racial factor. I would just suggest that given the fact that morality is not going to win the day for the Republican Party, not considering everything that they have on their plate, I think it was a dumb move by the Republicans, and I don't think it's going to work for them in Tennessee.
And I have to just very briefly respectfully respond to that. And my reading of history, it's I think your statement candidly is a little bit disingenuous. If there are those individuals in Tennessee who are not going to vote for an African-American man for the United States Senate based on a woman in a television spot, I think that's silly.
Make that distinction.
I will make the distinction. I'm suggesting, however, that if individuals are racist and not going to vote for an African-American man for the United States Senate, I suspect that their minds have already been made up to this point and not based on one single ad with one blonde woman.
All right. We have time for just one more topic, and briefly. Justice Department reached a settlement with Armstrong Williams, the conservative commentator, over his promotion of the Bush administration education reforms. He was not guilty of any criminal violations, even though he was paid. Now, on the other side, a company headed by President Bush's brother and partly owned by his parents may be benefiting from the No Child Left Behind law. It's an educational products distribution company. So these two controversies or these two issues, is No Child Left Behind falling prey to abuse? I'm going to ask you, Yvonne, to start us off.
Well, I think that the topics are somewhat different. In terms of Armstrong Williams, I think that the main issue, as the public viewed it, as the Justice Department viewed it, was that he was holding himself out as a neutral person when, in fact, he was taking money through, I believe, a publicity arm that he had formed, and he had not been fully candid with the public in so doing. I think the Bush family issue is different from the standpoint Neil Bush is presenting himself as a businessman who is selling educational products. And at this point, some people have signed on. They think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Other people have not bought or re-upped their orders because they don't think that the product is that good. So I'm not sure that I see abuse in the same way in these two particular issues. I think Armstrong Williams, he might not have been found guilty of any criminal misconduct, but he wasn't forthright in letting the public know what his associations were when he was making these promotions of No Child Left Behind.
I'm going to have to cut you off, unfortunately, okay. Very, very quickly. Ron and then Walter.
Armstrong Williams was a case of poor judgment. In full disclosure, he should have let it be known to his listeners, to his client base, that in fact he had taken money from the Department of Education and to act as a surrogate or to act for publicity purposes. And I think that the condemnation from the public is well deserved. As it relates to Neil Bush and Ignite, No Child Left Behind gives money to the states to establish curriculum for math and for reading for middle school children primarily. And I think that those funds are best left to the states to determine which programs, which companies, which deliverers of services are best in a position to fulfill the requirements of No Child Left Behind. So I think there's a distinction. And from what I've been able to see thus far, there's nothing wrong with what Neil Bush has done and what the Bush family has done here.
Walter, quickly.
I think it's part of the larger moral and ethical contradiction of Republican conservatives that you stand on morality, and I think they're going to fall on morality. So whether it's Armstrong Williams or Neil Bush, who I think the last time we heard from him was in an SNL scandal. So, you know, I think part of what we have to look at is that there is a pattern here. And there's even a pattern among black conservatives. I mean, you had Clarence Thomas, who was nominated for Supreme Court, admitting that he had a collection of erotica, which some of us would just simply call porn. So you have these Republicans who stand on these moral issues, but when you open up the closet, you have to get out of the way because they don't have skeletons. They've got a whole cemetery.
All right, there. We got to leave it there. I'm sure that they'll be back. Folks will be back to listen more. Walter Fields of the NorthStarNetwork.com, Ron Christie, Vice President for the DC Navigators, and Yvonne Bino, author of Stand and Deliver. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.